Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the
Hey everybody, this is Greg Soule from Texas with the Brothers Wisps number 63. Today we have straight from the Slovakian luge team, we've got Thomas Kernek.
Hello.
And then right up to my right, we've got Mike Hammett from Chicagoland.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going, brother. All right, man. So before we get rocking and rolling today, I wanted to say that today we have a sponsor, the very first sponsor, Sonar. So there's this guy, Simon, and we're old friends. We used to hang out on the playground. I used to get picked on a lot, but he would sort of protect and take care of me. And then one day he grew up and he ended up making this cool Sonar software. And he was like, hey, man, you should check this stuff out. And I did, and it blew my mind. And all of that story was fake except for the last bit. It's really cool stuff. I know a lot of folks using it. I just picked up another consulting customer who's using Sonar, so it's gaining popularity. I know a couple of really major wireless ISPs that like it just because of its configuration abilities. It's very flexible. So I'd love for you guys to go and check out sonar.software. Give them a shout, and if you like what you see, be sure to tell them that you found them from us. All right. So jumping right into it, we have a lot of MikroTik updates. I'm a big fan of MikroTik stuff, so I put that towards the top of the list, and then we've got some other stuff in there. They announced several new products. I mean, I think they're new-ish. Well, they have the WAP 60G, right? And that was announced a while back, but that's actually finally hit the market, so people are starting to use those guys. And I think they also have the WAP 60G access point, which is going to be the 60 gigahertz base station, so you can do point to multipoint with these things. I think I want to say up to 8 clients on this thing, which is pretty cool. 60 degree beam forming, 760 megahertz CPU, 256 megs of RAM. Cool thing about these things, when you're doing point to point, I mean they're designed for 100 plus meters, and when you're at those distances, you can expect to see a gig of throughput, theoretically, gig interfaces. Have you guys seen anybody testing? I've heard of good results. I just haven't heard of anybody saying, yeah, I'm consistently getting a full duplex gig out of this thing. Any thoughts on that? To be honest with you, I picked up one of the WAP 60G kits, but I haven't even pulled it out of the box yet. I lied. I pulled one out and I thought, wow, this is heavy because, you know, it's got kind of that cast aluminum inside, I guess the heat sink or whatever. So they feel hefty, but it's still the WAP form factor, but I haven't actually plugged them in and passed any traffic. So what do you guys think so far? Have you heard anything one way or the other?
Yet, I still get a lot of people that don't seem to understand how 60 gig is going to work very much differently than your other bands. You know, most WISPs are not deploying in a band where they have to worry about, you know, atmospheric situations. And so I hear of guys deploying, you know, three kilometer 60 gig links, and I'm like, yeah, that's going to work today, but it's not going to work tomorrow. I don't remember the numbers. There was something, I heard somebody doing, they one of these WAP 60 links, and it was ridiculous distance. And he's like, are you going to, you know, argue with my, you know, real world versus your theory? I'm like,
wait till it rains and then talk to me.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, I don't, you know, I mean, obviously I prefer real world to, you know, to theory, but if you don't understand how the real world works, then you don't understand where it's going to fail.
Yeah, and I think on these WAP 60s, MikroTik's calling these things wireless wire, right? Because it's short range wireless, so it's really more building to building sort of thing. It's 60 gigahertz, which means what is that, millimeter wave? So it's very susceptible to atmospheric aberrations. So rain is going to cause a lot of fade, especially at distance and things like that, from what I understand. It does have the beam forming, so it can sort of work around things, but it's not made to go too far. but it is exceedingly inexpensive. I think a pair of these come right out of the box and they're pre-configured to bridge together. I think they even have default, not the default blank password, but I think they actually come with a configured randomized password, which is new for MikroTik. They've never done that in the past, but I'm assuming, and my thinking is, these guys are designed for any schmuck, any IT guy to take these, hang them up, and they'll just magically work. And so just to be a little bit extra safe, they decided, you know, there's going to be a lot of jobbers, a lot of noobs using these things. So perhaps we should put a default, rather a non-blank, non-null password on these things. I am really excited about these. I truly am. And I've got a link in mind. I'm going to test these on. I just haven't had the opportunity to throw them up yet. But looking forward to playing with them.
Yet, I see one of the vendors is saying that they'll have, you know, like their, you know, retail shipment will be the first week of February, which is, I guess, we're already through the first partial week. They've got the WAP 60, or like the wireless wire kit, for $165. That is a cheap way of moving a gig.
That is exceedingly inexpensive. I mean, it blows my mind, because I go back to like 10 years ago. Can you imagine at that distance moving a gig of traffic for, you know, $170? It just seems impossible, indistinguishable from magic at this point to me.
But, and then, you know, I kind of wonder what the rest of it's like, because we've got, so you have the WAP 60, you know, kit is $165. The WAP 60 just station by itself is $85, and then the WAP 60 AP is $107. So it's like, so you get one AP, one station, you're at $185, $20 more, and I assumed it was all the same hardware.
I'm not sure, because I know the WAP 60 AP says that it's got like a 60 degree antenna, so maybe that's wider than just the clients?
On the spec sheet here, I mean, it's not the official one, but it says it has a 60-degree beamforming on that one, too. I know that station to AP, they have level 3 versus level 4.
Oh, there you go. Different license.
Licenses, but then, you know, what comes in the, you know, what comes in the kit? I mean, why would we just buy a whole bunch of kits? And, you know, because I haven't done anything with MikroTik Wireless in a long, long time. What does level 3 get you on the wireless side?
Level 3, you can do a point-to-point bridge between those two. Level 3 is usually you can't run as like an access point, but you can set it up so that it'll just do a point-to-point bridge, whereas level 4 gives you the ability to have access point mode.
Okay, yeah, so then it, you know, they've got two level 3s in the box then, which, you know, now makes the, you know, the box cheaper than buying, you know, two stations separately. So that makes sense.
All right, cool. They also, I think this was announced since the last time we talked, the HAP AC2, so it's the Wave 2 wireless. We'd actually, no, we had discussed it before because we saw it going through the FCC. Now these things have actually been officially announced because they're up on, I almost said routerboard.com, but it's microtik.com/product. It's actually on the product page. You can see the PDF. They've made the announcement in the newsletter, a little bit more information. So they do have that black case, the really nice case with kind of the pips on it, like a die on the front. What is it? Some people are complaining that there's no PoE out on Ether 5, but it's got everything else. Well, the PoE in is passive only, so it's not AFAT. It's not any compliance, but they are coming in. They're saying suggested retail is $69, so they'll probably be somewhere in the $60 range for these guys, which is literally half the price of the standard full HAP AC. So it's exceedingly inexpensive.
And so then, you know, they have the, you know, HAP AC Lite and the HAP AC, which, you know, HAP AC was the, you know, premium product. Now you have the, you know, HAP AC 2 or squared. Not sure what the verbiage is they want for that. I'm sure they'll tell us. So then, is this better than the other one because it has less stuff but a better chipset? So...
I know the proc is pretty good. It's an ARM32 4-core 716 megahertz, so it's a lot beefier than the other one.
That so I don't I don't know if that's like it seems better in most ways, but then there's a couple that aren't. So it's like, well, are they still going to sell some of the previous one because some areas it's better?
I think, who is it? Was it Alex? Was also saying that the standard HAPAC has, I think, 3 chains on 5 gigahertz, and this one only has 2 chains. So it's slightly less device, but it's half the price. And you still get the gig interfaces in the bigger proc, so I'm excited. I'm probably going to buy a whole bunch of these soon. So I was talking to my local distributor, ISP Supplies, and he was saying, I think a week ago, that it would be 3 to 4 weeks, something like that, before they got product, because the shipment was already on its way. So I don't know. Probably by the time you guys listen to this, it'll be less than a month before these are hitting distributors. So that's exciting, interesting.
I did want to circle back one quick thing I just noticed on some of the WAP60 stuff. The vendor that I'm looking at is talking about... Never mind. I retract that. I thought I read it as talk about some vendor interop between 60 gigahertz and different manufacturers. I thought they were saying to do that, but they were saying just, you know, if you want a longer link to go with this other guy instead. But then I guess it kind of brings back to the 60 gigahertz interop question. They're all, you know, 802.11 AD. Has anybody tried to connect an IgniteNet to a MikroTik or a Siklu? I think Siklus are still running, standard. Or, well, Siklu multipoint, not, if anybody tried to connect different manufacturers together, it's the same chipsets, so, and I doubt they've had time to do anything special with it yet. Could you put up an AP of say that this WAP60 AP and throw on some of IgniteNet's high power clients?
I'd be curious to see if anybody wants to give that a go. Let us know about it. Let's see, moving right along, they also have announced the Cap AC, so finally an AC version of the Cap, and it looks like it's using the exact same chipset as the HAP AC. It's the IPQ4018, so it's virtually the same chipset. So you've got dual band in there, you've got the 2 gigahertz and the 5 gigahertz. It apparently is the same board, just in a different form factor. They also include kind of a round enclosure that looks more like a smoke detector, and then they've got sort of one that's square with rounded corners. So they're a lot nicer looking, decidedly so. But other than that, they appear to be the exact same thing, although they also say that they have PoE in that's AFAT compliant. So these actually are compliant, whereas the HAP AC is not. Though it's coming in at the exact same suggested retail price of $69, which kind of breaks my heart. I wish the HAP AC had the AFAT compliance. Again, I'm just bitching and moaning because I could use cheap old Cisco kit and power these things up.
Yeah, it's that sort of use case. Which there are other switches that can do that. With passive power, but trickles you back to for multi-tenant facilities. I'm seeing people starting wanting to do fiber everywhere, and I keep saying in a multi-tenant, don't do fiber everywhere, to get that extra pizzazz out of your clients. Do it from a PoE switch, and put a UPS on it so that you can say that you still have internet when Comcast and AT&T, whoever, your DSL or cable providers, don't, because they're not powering their CPE.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in an environment like that too, no longer do you have to call the client and say, hey, can you reboot your modem? You have control of the PoE switch and you can reboot it for them, which is infinitely.
Also, the important part is also that with AFNAT, you can do power auto detect, which I haven't yet seen a switch which can do automatic power detection with passive PoE, which is also quite important. Because with passive PoE, it's either on or off. You know, you have that power on that port all of the time if you configure it. So if a user plugs in something that's not supposed to take in passive PoE, well, bad news for the user, right?
It's going
to
cook them, right?
With AFNAT, it just works.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to do some auto detection. So I guess that would be really good in a mixed environment where you're going to have you know, access points potentially or clients directly plugging in. So in that same, I guess, kind of multi-tenant environment, it would make it really easy. So all the wall ports could just go into the switch and as well as the access points, and it would be able to intelligently derive that information.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, it doesn't even have to be, you know, mixed type, you know, types of devices or availability, but I mean, you know, if the customer has reasonable access to the equipment, you know, they're going to unplug it at some point and plug something else into it. It's just
or plug it into the wrong port, or you know how people are.
Well, I think it's kind of funny too. If you're putting these into a multi-tenant environment where people aren't supposed to be touching your gear, and they decide to unplug and plug straight into the wall port to see what would happen, you know, it's kind of maybe they get a little just desserts there. Not that I would condone that. But I think it's interesting. So in the newsletter as well, they had talked about those products, but then kind of in the middle of those products, they're showing how they can plug into the CRS. They're talking about the CRS 112-8P-4S-IN, which is basically an 8-port PoE switch. It's a smaller CRS. I believe it does AFAT as well as passive.
Yeah.
Right? It does all of those with 4 SFP ports. So it's interesting. I remember Thrift immediately lamented the fact that this was another 112 and he really wants them to continue working on the 300 series just because it's, you know, it's got the processor with the fascinating chipsets and all that potential there. But this thing supposedly is going to retail for around the, it says 179, so I'm guessing 165, 170, somewhere in that neighborhood, which is...
I'm sorry, Microtik, but can we just get rid of the 1 and 2 series CRSs? I'm sorry, but they really are just useless.
The economies of scale, right? You get rid of all of those small 1 and 2s, and then you just focus all that energy and production on the 300s, drop the price down.
Well, it's not about getting rid of the small ones. Just make the small ones 3 series as well, so they have proper hardware in them, and we can utilize all the new things and do everything in the proper way, and yeah. Especially releasing new products, right? If we already have the 3 series and if we have the support.
I think we lost...
For those chips, it doesn't really make much sense to release.
Yet, somebody, I saw on Facebook, I believe it was, somebody was not happy that, that this, to use the PoE, you have to buy another power brick. Like, it doesn't come with the power brick you need to do PoE. It only comes with power brick to turn it on.
Well, that's interesting. I saw that there were 2 barrel jacks in the back, but I didn't realize that was the rationale there.
Yeah, there is a secondary DC jack on the back of the enclosure that supports 48 to 57 volt power supply. Not included, can be purchased separately. And I think there's a, you know, this person's point was just make the whole thing 48 volt and just don't, you know, just include it. You know, have a transformer built in to drop down to 24 if, you know, somebody plugs one of those in, but just make it 48 to start with.
Yeah. Let's see, on the newsletter, they're also talking about the LHG XL5AC and then XL2. For any of you guys that do, I guess, distance Microtik wireless, that's going to be their grid-style antennas. AC says retail $99, and the 2 gigahertz is $68. I won't beat that to death because not too many people use those. Let's see. Anything else of interest? A new way to match websites in firewall? The TLS hosts?
I saw some people on Facebook talking about that and how, like, there's already been, like, numerous, like, revisions to it, you know, in the change logs, and how they couldn't get it to work. Like, there were some, like, you know, like, fixing each problem they come up with. It's just, you know, they could have spent some more time, you know, baking before. But I guess that's the point of the release candidate train is, you know, no guarantee it actually works.
Get it out there, let the people try it. You have any interest in this, Thomas? You're the smartest guy on here. You tell me about it.
Honestly, I don't see a point in blocking individual websites through firewall. It's not scalable. It's not really applicable to any real setups. So for us, if a client requests blocking, it's usually category-based blocking, where we need to block entire categories of websites. You know, you will not go and chase every single domain of Facebook, right? Because Facebook has, I don't know, hundreds of domains at least, right? And since this is done, I don't mean just like, you know, block star.facebook.com. They have fb.com, they have various different other, you know, second level domains as well. And as I said, that's just talking about Facebook, right? Usually when a client wants to block something, they want to block a category, you know, all social websites, etc., etc. So for us, I don't really see a point in blocking individual websites. I'm sure there is many people who will be happy to use this and who have use cases for this. You know, I'm not complaining that MikroTik added a new feature, but, you know, still doesn't fulfill that category-based blocking need for us. Gotcha.
So if you are going to do category-based blocking, what do you guys utilize for that?
So we have two things which we deploy depending on what the client needs and what they want to do. Either we deploy OpenDNS and do the blocking through OpenDNS, which I think is generally the best way in today's HTTPS, you know, encrypted world.
That's what we end up using most of the time.
Yeah. So either do that or we do untangle.
I could see it being useful in being easier to have precision on walled gardens. Like if you're blocking, if a customer stops paying you and your system shuts it off, you know, right now you're whitelisting, you know, the IPs of your servers versus, you know, because you can't, you know, do anything layer 7 with the HTTPS stream. So it's pretty much if you allow 443 at all, you know, previously you had to whitelist by IP address to get to your, you know, payment gateways and things. You know, not a big, you know, not a big deal, but I mean, you know, here you could whitelist, you know, your domain, and then that way then if there was you know, you changed IP addresses or you know, served from multiple locations, you know, it would cover, you know, all of that. Allow my domain and my payment gateway domains and then block everything else.
Sure. So what else do they have on here?
I can see it being useful in these cases, you know, when you explicitly deny access to everything and then allow only certain hosts. But I think the reality in today's world is if you are integrating a payment gateway, realistically, you will just get one line of JavaScript, and that line of JavaScript can pull so many different things from so many different domains. And not just that, but the backend and the payment gateway provider, you know, they can add things to the JavaScript or remove it, because you get one line, but that dynamically loads other JavaScript, which can load other modules and other blah, blah, blah. So realistically, it's still a little bit, you know, vulnerable to you not even knowing that the payment gateway made the change and suddenly it doesn't work for you because, you know what I mean. So it's kind of a finicky setup to do it that way, that you have to actually, you know, check continuously if it works, and, you know, ads work when somebody else changes something, doesn't let you know, and it breaks stuff for you. So.
Like to back up one step on that newsletter, on the LTE mini PCIe cards. You know, I know they've been doing stuff like this for a while, you know, mini PCIe or whatnot. And as I was reading it, I got really excited because I saw, you know, widest LTE frequency band support. And then I saw later a model for the United States. I thought, you know, finally they'll have an LTE module that supports the bands that I want. And the answer to that is no. None of the bands that it supports I care about. I don't remember what they all are off the top of my head, but I'm looking for 25, 26, and 41.
You know, I just want a functional card that works here in the U.S. for, like, Ting. Have you ever used Ting? T-I-N-G? You can get really cheap SIM cards, or, you know, if your device supports it, you can just punch the number straight in, and I think it's $6 a month flat rate for each one, and then they only bill you based on utilization after that. And so, and an average out of band with like a tunnel, I think it costs me like $9 a month. So it's pretty worth.
You know, I've got a couple prototypes setups with one that uses Freedom Pop. They wholesale Sprint's network, and I'm paying like $2, $3, $4, $5 a month, something like that. But you know, I'm using a USB, device, and due to some limitations in RouterOS that will not be resolved until the next major version, it wasn't really friendly. I mean, you know, I made it work at home, but it wasn't, you know, my intent was, you know, I do all the work to get this put together. You know, I'll get a bulk deal with these guys, you know, buy, you know, 400 of them, and then I'll, you know, sell them out to other people. You know, not make a lot of money, just, you know, you know, a few bucks here, a few bucks there. But then all the setup to make it work was not something I want to support for somebody else. So,
yeah, I found like there's some Franklin manufactured USB Sprint cards that are basically end of life that you can pick up on eBay. And those with Ting seem to work pretty well in like the Hap AC lights. So that's what we've been doing. I really like if we could just order one of the HAP LTEs or whatever they are that has it built in, and then just it magics. That would be the coolest thing ever. I would really enjoy that.
I think something that'd be nice is that if you've got Google Fi, their phone service, I'm not sure if you can actually buy that outside of the United States currently. They use in the U.S. they use Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cellular as you know native networks, and that is you know you pay for exactly what you use at you know $10 per gig. If you have their phone service, then they let you purchase you know data only SIMs to pop in anything. You know I don't want that you know. I don't want that because then, you know, I have Sprint right now, and then I would lose all of Sprint's, you know, roaming work they've done with, you know, the Royal Partners. You know, going with Google Fi, you wouldn't have that. But it makes me, you know, almost makes me want to just buy an old Google Fi phone for phone service just to buy the data-only SIMs because it's like, you know, $10 per gig, you know, consumption only.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, it would cost you nothing for all that stuff, but, you know, then it would support multiple networks.
All right, so let's move to the bottom of the newsletter. It shows that in Baltimore, April 12th and 13th this year, Baltimore, Maryland, they're having the U.S. MUM. My mom moved to Baltimore not too long ago, and I haven't actually visited her yet, so I'm assuming this means I have to go. I don't know that there's necessarily a choice in this matter. I think Miller lives in Virginia, so he's going to be pretty close, and he's saying he's going to jet over. I don't know that anybody else will, because I don't know. I hear Baltimore's not that interesting, but there's a little bit of that there. And then also, I see they have The European Mom is in Berlin, Germany, April 5th through 6th. And I'm assuming Unimus will be there, won't they?
Yeah, we are hoping to go to both, actually. So.
Oh, that would be dope. Are you going to do Wispapalooza? You're doing Wispapalooza this year, right?
Hopefully. That's the plan.
Okay. Well, that would be cool. I also see that there's one in Auckland in May, and I believe that's where Andrew Thrift lives, so I'm assuming he'll go to that, unless he's exceedingly lazy, which I don't think he is. All right.
I was involved in a couple discussions on Facebook regarding the MUM, the U.S. MUM, and it's likely falling on deaf ears, but I would prefer it if Microtik took the MUM and, you know, bookended like the Wispa show, you know, the spring one, fall one, whichever one.
Well, the Wispa America might be perfect because I know Microtik says they like to move around and see different cities and Wispa America changes cities all the time, right? So if they kind of shove those together, that would sort of suit both of those things.
Sure, yeah, because like, you know, you look at the, you know, European MUMs and some of the Southeast Asian MUMs, and there's, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 attendees, you know, similar to a Wispa show, you know, more so, you know, population of, you know, of the Vegas show as opposed to the spring show. But, you know, but the U.S. MUMs have like a tenth of that. I think it's be a great way to, you know, increase attendance if you just make it easier for people to go.
Does Wisp America last an entire week?
I believe the official agenda this spring is like Tuesday through Thursday. So the MUM could be Sunday, Monday, or Friday, Saturday, or, you know, something like that.
Interesting.
You know, some of the arguments were that, you know, that the, you know, that, you know, Microtik has gone beyond Wisps and, you know, people wouldn't go to the MUM if it was, you know, at the same place and, you know, as the Wispa show, which made no sense to me. Like, Microtik, everybody's the MUM. Hey, you know, Wispa's in Birmingham this, you know, March. We're also in Birmingham this March. Like, so what if the enterprise consultants or whatever, like,
I think so it would drive up attendance. I think if you book into those two together, some of the Wispapalooza guys would hang out over there and vice versa. So I think it would be good for both organizations.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't foresee it happening, but, you know, I can advocate for it.
All right.
You know, I think it only help.
So let's see. What else do you have on the list? USB powered Microtik. What's that? Or MT?
Oh yeah. Yeah. For Microtik. And it's just cause I haven't gotten around to looking. I just thought about it on my drive home. So are the map light, the only one you can power off of USB?
I think you can power a HAP light off of USB as well. I think it's pretty much the same chipset between those, are pretty close. I know I've powered off my laptop a HAP light before.
Oh, yeah, the well HAP lights actually don't have power plugs at all. They're USB only. So out of the box, they actually come with the power plug is, you know, a standard power plug, but at the other end, it's a USB.
Are those single band or those?
Those are 2/4. Yeah, all three of those.
So then I might have to buy two. I'm looking for a way. It's too late for this first part of the trip. Tomorrow I wake up at like 3 a.m. so I can catch a flight to San Francisco for the week.
Well, that's right.
And there's Wi-Fi on the plane, so I plan to purchase it. But my plan was, I'm traveling with four other people. I could set up a little repeater. And if it was a dual band USB powered, then I just need one box. But
so you can actually still do it with one box, because a single wireless interface in Microtik can be a client and an access point at the same time. Really? You can create a virtual access point on an interface which is in client mode.
So I think I might have to order one of these and have it sent to where I'm staying out in San Francisco so I can try it on the flight home.
So is this why you're talking about payment gateways? You plan on buying it and reselling it for half the price? Is that the idea?
I think probably just share it amongst those I'm traveling with.
Yeah, for sure.
I imagine though I should probably be asleep, the whole way. I'll be after I wake up, I'm not gonna be able to sleep until I, go to bed that night. So get that about, start working. Might as well share it amongst those that can use it. I forget a 950 or 751, the very first one they released. Actually, they released that in the last time Microtik did a show the same time as the WISPA show, out in Vegas, I think 2011. I use that as my travel router. That goes with me every trip I go, in case the hotel has some silly Wi-Fi restrictions or whatever, numbers of Macs you can use or things like that. I'll bust that out as my own in-room AP, usually with humorous SSIDs. I think the last set was all about Matt Hardy leaving Ubiquity. Parodied some other song. I can't remember what it is right now, but anyway, so that serves me well for that. That's all the router does, and it serves me well, but it could be hard to power that on a plane. So let's bring along USB battery pack, one of these guys, and
Bob's your uncle. You'd be good. Be good to go. All right. So it looks like we have kind of at the time range we're at. Normally, this is about when we hit one of our sort of open-ended discussion. We've got a couple of those listed on here. And since I'm hosting and I put it on first, I'm going to put mine out there first. And I listened to a TED talk the other day, and it was this surgeon, and it centered around, why don't we have coaches in normal life, right? Why do we only have that in competitive sports? And case in point, he was talking about how as a surgeon, he started out and he, continually improved. From the time he got out of medical school, his instances of, say, infection or things like, or just, complications due to the surgery sort of started declining. There was a fairly steep curve. It declined, but then he plateaued. And then, he said after about 4 years, he just wasn't getting any better. And so he was thinking to himself, is this as good as I can be? And I can't remember what spurred it on, but he decided, why can't people have coaches in everyday sort of normal life and regular jobs? And so he actually hired his, one of his professors, one of his famous first professors, who had retired. He said, "Hey, would you mind coming in and critiquing me, in my surgery?" And so he had him come in, and he was kind of standing over his shoulder and watching him while he was doing the surgery. And, when he got through, he was like, "Man, I nailed it. I killed that surgery. I'm not going to have anything to talk to this guy about." And he looks over at him, and he's got this sheet of paper that's just covered in tiny scrawl of notes, and he was like, at this point you had your elbow up, and you should never do that when you're in surgery, and if you have to reach and do these things, you need to get a longer tool and blah blah blah. And so he said over the course of a year, he kept having him come in and critique him and change and adjust. And he said some of it was hard and some of it wasn't terribly hard, but he said he started learning again, he started improving again, and he saw that issue after surgery level, he saw that decline even further, and so he was kind of applying this to medical field and all these other things. And I was thinking about networking as well, right? It's, how often do we have a network coach? Somebody, I guess you maybe almost a mentor, come in and kind of evaluate. So I know growing up in the networking game, I didn't really have anybody, and it sort of suits my personality that I can't ask for help. There's like this little piece of my brain that tells me it's not okay to ask anybody for help, I've sort of broken out of that mold over time, and that's how I collected all of you guys, right? You're this brain trust, these people that I can tap and ask questions to, but I never used to allow myself to do that, and it's still, I thought to myself, could I have one of you guys come in and shadow me, and it felt a little hinky. You know, I mean, it felt like I was licking sandpaper. It just kind of, you know, because it just, part of me, it just, the fear, like, I can't imagine having Thomas come and watch me do normal things. Like, just, I don't know that I could take that level of devastation when he tells me all the things I'm doing wrong. But part of me wants that, because I do love learning. I do love growing, and I do love improving. And every time I see somebody do something, I learn something, you know, I mean, I learn a different technique, a different way of doing it. And a lot of times it's basic things that somehow or another I missed because I was too terrified to ask for help or to seek out advice. So in the notes here, I said, could Greg check his ego? And I've gotten better at that. But what do you think? Do you think there would be value in a network coach or sort of a mentor thing? Two, do you think you could have somebody actually shadow you and look at how you do things and offer constructive criticism, improvement?
I definitely think that, I mean, in almost all aspects of life, there would be value in that. Because rarely do any of us do anything perfectly. You know, we're always doing something wrong, you know, but network specifically, or, you know, getting, you know, closer to, our segment of the world. There's a lot of people that think that their way to do something is the only way to do something. Regardless of how correct or incorrect it is. You know, I've seen some pretty strong opinions places where the person was just wrong. There's no way about it, they were wrong. That type of person, who is prevalent in the industry, I mean, most of us, that's how, you know, most of us have started businesses providing these services. That's just kind of how our personalities are, you know. You know, saw a void, you know, took the, you know, fulfilled that, and, you know, no one else can do this but me. You know, I don't know how receptive we would be of it. We need it.
Now, do you, and obviously this is just going to be complete opinion, do you believe that those people maybe, you know, I mean, I try and think of why people do the things they do, because most of the time I don't even understand why I do the things I do. So maybe through learning how they and why they do things, I can understand myself a little better. Do you think maybe it's that, you know, like anytime you're starting a WISP, right? It's a huge investment of time, money, and energy. And if you push all of that time and money and energy towards something, you got to believe in your heart of hearts that, like, I am doing the right thing. This is it. This is the way of doing it, right? You know, I mean, you just put in fifth gear and jam down on the pedal, right? So if somebody comes along and says, you know, maybe you could, you know, it'd be a little bit, you know, better to do it over here or there, maybe, you know, you just have to convince yourself so hard that I'm doing this the right way, that, you know, it's, I don't know, I've seen some people that are like that, and you know, everybody does it for a reason. Nobody just chooses to be an asshole. It's not, you know what I mean? It's like they're made that way for a specific reason, but.
I could see it being sort of a, you know, as you're getting your feet wet, as you're starting to figure out what you need to do, or as you're just beginning to do them, you know, you're a lot more open to suggestion, most people, because, you know, they haven't proven that they know what they're doing in some fashion. But, you know, once your, you know, profit and loss statement comes back and, you know, you haven't lost money doing what you're doing, you know, hopefully you even made some money, you know, I think that could be the moment where a lot of people, so, you know, kind of, in, you know, dig in of, you know, I can't be doing it that bad if I'm making money at it. Like, you know, if there's people willing to give me money to do this. So much so that it's been worth my time to build it. so then, you know, what they've done works because they're getting paid and they're being, you know, some degree of success at it. So it must be the right way because people are paying them.
So having said that, would you be comfortable with somebody looking over your shoulder and critiquing you and you know, just giving you some pointers and stuff like that?
In some aspects, yes. In some aspects, no. There's tons of things I admit that I don't know very well. Because you can't know everything about everything. But then there's things that I think I know really well. Even if I don't, I'm going to be like, yeah, I know that. But there's still, you know, there's still things in those areas that I'm not going to know perfectly and could use the critique. And in those areas, I probably wouldn't be as comfortable as somebody telling me, no, you've done that wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I
need it. Certainly I need it because it just makes everything I do better. But I don't know that the longer I've done something, the less likely I probably am to accept that I've done something incorrectly.
All right. Well, I also know something about myself is a lot of time, I've always heard and I've read before that you can always hire more people. You can always somehow find more capital, but you can't buy more time, right? So time's a precious commodity, a precious resource. And for a lot of me, sometimes, I found that if I can find a way that works, I will go with it, right? It seems like it works. It seems like it's solid. It's sort of triage, you know? It's like you just pick which things require more of your time and you do whatever you can to complete that and then just so you can move on to the next. You know, I don't always have time to beat those things to death. And I know part of, like, Thomas up here, I'm going to keep referring to him. His personality is he seems like he needs to fundamentally understand it, but also in such a way that it's the best way to do it. So it seems like Thomas has a perfectionist personality, which is insane.
I definitely do.
Yeah, I don't, because to me...
That's actually, in many times, that's a disadvantage as well. I mean...
They say something I've heard is perfect is the enemy of good. Right. Because sometimes you just need it to be good. You don't need it to be perfect. And then you can move on and put that energy towards something else, which is probably partly why that you're up at 3 a.m. right now talking to us, just because you're that guy that has to get it done. So I can very much understand that there are probably common things that I've done for years that Thomas could look at and say, you know, if you did this and this, you'd get this amount of improvement. Just like how a lot of times I used to just throw a masquerade rule on something. I didn't realize that actually doing a source NAT straight to a specific IP address would save resources on your router. That was just something that I never picked up on. I mean, I'm sure that's old hand Thomas up here, but it wasn't to me. And so I think I could check my ego for the betterment of myself to have somebody like Tom. Now, not somebody like Mike. He's got nothing to teach me, but somebody like Thomas, obviously, could teach me a thing or two. I would just have to put on my armor, get ready for the lumps.
Think you're giving me way too much credit here.
But no, think about it. Like, how much time would it actually take? Because you could probably, in an hour's time, have somebody connect to you, say with TeamViewer, and you just sort of walk through your network, walk through a diagram, talk about what you do and how you do it and some of the various things. And I bet in that hour, you can derive a lot of really good information. You know, maybe, I've seen in these instances, I've done this and this, and I've run into that and that, and, sort of a mentor. It doesn't even have to be sort of a coach. To me, the word coach means somebody who's going to be with you over time progressively. And usually when I think mentor, that's somebody who kind of pops in every month and you guys have a conversation, with slow incremental changes. You know, these are the issues I'm running into, and you can kind of offer advice back and forth. I think that's really useful. I just don't know that there's enough people out there that do it, especially in the wireless ISP industry, because people are so guarded. You know, there are some folks that are willing to talk. You know, there's like your Chuck Hoggs and folks like that, and I mean, all of the guys who jump on here are usually really open to talking. But a lot of other people, you know, the secret sauce, that's what makes them different, and they just don't want to share that information. And It's kind of a shame.
And you know, you can see that same sort of thing, you know, manifest when they talk about, you know, other Wisps or their competition or something like that, and like, you know, they're so guarded about, you know, other Wisps being in the area, or whatever, and it's, or, you know, working with, you know, cooperatively with them, you know, frequency planning or, you know, GPS sync, you know, configuration, you know, planning so that, you know, they can, you know, operate harmoniously. And, you know, a lot of them aren't willing to do that. And, I mean, you know, then there are those that are, you know, they're willing to throw up backhauls to the Wisps, you know, hey, you know, if something goes on, you know, throw some traffic over my backhaul just to, you know, help you out.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so I have interest in that. If any of you guys listening have any interest in this, you know, the kind of the mentor coach thing, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going this, but maybe we could sort of organize a network together and like a network of people. That's what I mean, not like an actual fit routers together. I'm just curious to see where it would go. Drop us a line on Facebook or hit me at greg@gregsoul.com. Let's see, moving on in the list. Mike, you had something that says account manager versus sales support versus sales engineer. Where are you going with this?
Ranting about vendors. what inspired it wasn't a vendor in the, you know, in the Wisp space. So I don't have to worry about offending anybody here. But I'm sure the shoe's going to fit, you know, some people. You know, a couple of years ago, I was kind of struggling with, you know, terminology of people doing sales type work. You know, there's a sales guy. Well, there's sales guys, but then there's business development. There's account managers, account executives, or sales engineering. You know, there's probably three times that many, you know, titles for people that are involved with the sale, you know, the sales process. And I think some of it's just kind of thrown around. It's just this word sounds cooler than this word and not really descriptive of what they do. For instance, I ran across somebody whose title was account manager.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when somebody's your account manager, what are your expectations of them? You know, what are they going to do for you?
It's all the same, man. Sales is sales is sales. I think, especially here in America, sales, the word sales, if you're a sales person, it has a very specific connotation. Everybody immediately envisions a used car salesman, right? Some sleazy dirtbag slime ball. I think that is such an antiquated notion that people need to switch it to think of sales as somebody who can help you get something done. You know, when you walk into a store, you walk into a Home Depot, you walk into a furniture store, it doesn't matter. Somebody will walk up and say, hey, can I help you? You're looking for something specific. They could help you, but what's the first thing you say? No thanks. I'll find it myself. It's almost like we're afraid that these people are somehow going to creep into our brains and make us buy the extra undercoating, you know, and the 8,000 throw pillows to go along with this. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know why we're wired that way, but salespeople are a tool. That's what I think of. Use them wisely. Some of them are better than others, right?
Some of them are tools.
Ugh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, some salespeople are basically just paperwork middlemen, right? They don't have any intelligence. They're not really terribly useful. I know some carriers actually, in the past, in lieu of hiring more engineers, hired more cheap sales labor. So you would basically scream at your first layer of sales that would then, you know, you could escalate and scream at the next. And it was basically just a stopgap so that the overworked amount of engineers they have now can have a little bit extra time to catch up on this stuff. So in that instance, I think it's total crap. But I also think that sales has this horrible connotation. Every one of us, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a salesperson. Right, because you're either a wireless ISP, if you're an installer, you are making and breaking that customer experience. You know what I mean? If you're out there and you're slovenly, you do a piss poor job, that reflects poorly on the company, right? You're selling, your actions, your mindfulness, you know, your communications with the customer. You are the salesperson. If you are the owner of the wireless ISP, you're obviously a salesperson. You know, if you're an MSP listening to this and you just happen to use this gear, you're a salesperson. I don't care if you're the engineer hitting the keys, right? Your responsiveness is part of sales, right? All of that goes to what people are buying. So get rid of this, I hired just a sales guy. Everybody's a sales guy. I mean, obviously some organizations are big enough or require dedicated sales folks to do this stuff. But yeah, get out of that mindset that I'm not a sales guy. You are a sales guy. And more to that point, you need to train yourself. You need to get some education on this stuff. There's this thing called the Sandler training. If you could go to that stuff, it was amazing. I got to taste a little bit of it here and there, and I ended up catching, they have this CD of just tidbits that you can get just all in MP3 format. And I've listened to it a couple times and I get great information off that stuff. But, I mean, technical guys, what do? We go and we get certification guides. We go and find material, we lab it, we test it, we build ourselves technically, right? What makes you think you can't build yourselves on the sales side as well? You absolutely can. There's a lot of pitfalls to look out for. Like, I used to have like customer remorse. Like, I used to, like, if we were selling something for like a 60% profit margin, I would feel bad. You know, I would like sort of side with them and I'd want to give them a discount. You know what I mean? It's like, that's crazy, because that profit is what feeds my kids and pays my mortgage. You know what I mean? So I had to like retrain myself to get out of that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of pitfalls associated with that. So I know that's a diatribe and this isn't anywhere near where you were going with this, but it's something I'm very passionate about, because I have done a lot of building myself in that. And maybe I'll do a quick and dirty video just talking about some of the things I've learned. But there are some very simple, like, pattern interruption things you can do with people. Some very common sense things, like upfront contract. This is my favorite thing, an upfront contract. Whenever you're going to talk to somebody, like if you're going to have a meeting, you break down all the steps that are going to happen and then have, you know, the follow-through steps. These are the next steps. So after we get through here, I'm going to hand you paperwork and I'm going to need you to sign it in a certain amount of time. And before we actually have this meeting, I give them the agenda and I give them the upfront contract. I say, is this okay? Right? All of this information, you understand all of this and you can change anything right now, but this is how it is right now. And if they agree to it, then they understand that once we follow all these steps, the next thing is to sign. So they don't get to dally. They don't get to disappear. They don't get to quit returning my calls and emails. They know exactly what's expected of them. And it's things like that, that whenever you're in the sales cycle, you'll go into this chase mode. And it's horrible because you're constantly calling them, you're banging on the door, they disappear. Get rid of the chase mode. Never do that again. I'm sure all of you have done that. Like, you're trying to sell something to somebody and you're constantly chasing them, hounding them down. And if you want to get rid of that stuff, do some sales training. It's amazing how we can all improve ourselves professionally in all of these different ways. Sorry. Feel free to continue, Mike.
No, there's, you know, useful stuff in there for sure. Over in Europe, is there much of a distinction in those sorts of terminology, or is it, you know, kind of where Greg started with and just kind of a mesh of everything?
I honestly wouldn't know. It does, especially in Slovakia, which is a really small country. Like, the entire country has just 6 million people. So we don't particularly have like huge big corporations which would be structured in a way that, you know, you would have that structure within sales that's, you know, every person is specialized for something and et cetera. So we don't have like the mentality that you mentioned, Greg, that, you know, everybody is a sleazy car salesperson. We don't really have that here. I suppose if I think about like the salespeople which I have in my distributors that I use and etc., I actually, you know, I genuinely like them. I if I have an issue, they will work with me to solve it, etc. And so from my experience and from the companies and distributors and vendors that I work with here, it's I suppose it's a bit different.
Yeah, US has that pull yourself up by your bootstraps, do it yourself, make yourself, you know, and we forget to to use all the resources available to us, right? Because of our pride, our American pride or whatever it is, that prevents us from using our vendors to the best of their abilities. You know, sometimes saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Is this the best option you think I have? You know, throw that out there, see what they come back with. You never know.
So maybe this is different as well, but for us, like, the sales are, if I were to ask that person, you know, do I have a better option, the sales guy wouldn't be able to tell me. He would, like, forward me to a product manager, right, or somebody like that. Yeah. So I don't know if that's the same for you guys, right, but...
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
You never really know.
What had brought this up was, so one of my clients, you know, at one of their vendors, or, well, I guess other vendors, it took me several weeks to find out who our account manager was. And I was looking for the account manager to then be the gateway into the company. You know, I need to know who to talk to about this, who to talk to in your company about this. You know, I'm having this problem, that problem. You know, I was looking for them to, you know, be like a relationship manager, of, you know, there are better people to talk to for everything, but he's your guy for everything. You know, like, you know, if you don't know where to go to him and, you know, he'll line you up or, you know, whatnot. And so once I finally got this account manager, and, like, you know, that's what it says, in, like, it, you know, in his title and his email is account manager. And I'm like, great, you know, I've got a guy that's going to get me connected to everybody. You know, every little thing I have an issue with that I don't know how to, you know, who to go to, you know, he'll, you know, he won't be the one helping me, but he'll say, you know, here's where you go and, you know, here's what they'll need. I don't remember the exact words, but they boiled down to, if you're not signing contracts or giving me money, don't talk to me. And I'm like, that's not what I pictured an account manager doing. Like, a sales guy, yeah, that's, you know, that's what a sales guy does, is he just give me money. I don't care about anything else. And so then he brings in this, you know, sales support guy. I'm like, and the sales engineer. I'm like, well, it's interesting in support and engineering, like, because neither of you are the people I go to when I have actual things are broken. So what are your jobs? And I haven't learned their distinction, who is supposed to be what. But, like, I still have, like, unresolved issues because I don't even know who to go to in the company. Like, this is broken. And then, you know, and of course, it doesn't help that, you know, my client, you know, there was some churn, and so nobody actually knows, you know, there's no documentation on things. So it's like, I go to the vendor, hey, you know, what do we have? I need some help with this. You know, this doesn't work. What do I need to do? And then I'm just being asked for, you know, IDs of things and or this or that. I'm like, I don't know. You tell me. What do we have with you? I'm sorry, you know, you'll need to have that ID for us to go any further. I'm like, well, where do I get that? I don't know. How do I... It's broken. Fix it, please.
Yeah. Usually when I get into that situation, I say, I have a bill in front of me. What can I read off of this to have you believe me?
And I've done that. And so, like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I'm like, you know, and then, like, I finally got what I thought I needed. And then, like, days go by with no response after putting in the ticket. And then I call back to check in on it. And they're like, oh, yeah, the technician closed out the next day and said it was fine. I'm like, it was fine. You know, what's your ticket for? And, like, it ended up being, like, they established that the technical piece between here and here functioned, not the end-to-end service. I said, oh, yep, this piece right here works. You're good. I'm like, well, the end-to-end service isn't working. Oh, it's not my fault. This works. You know. My system says this is up. Well, I don't. This other thing doesn't work. Well, I don't know. I don't know either. That's
frustrating
why
at best. I think we've all been there at some point. You just want, just give me the guy. Just, I know there's a guy. Just tell me who the guy is, and I will talk to the guy, and I will save you time. and you will save me heartache.
But
sometimes getting to that guy takes a while.
But then my client did tell me a bit of advice, and it makes sense for sure here, and probably applies to other organizations as well. When you have retail and wholesale, especially if the wholesale is forced by regulation, you're not going to find the best caliber of people working on the retail side. You're not going to find the best salespeople or the best support people or the best engineers on the wholesale side if it's forced by regulation, because they're forced by regulation to do that. They don't have to excel at it. They don't have to earn your business. You know, if they're being forced to do it, you know, you want it more than they do. So they put all their good guys over on the retail side, you know, be it enterprise or whatever. So all the good salespeople, all the good support contacts go over there. Anybody who hasn't, you know, done anything illegal or stole things from the company, you know, goes on the wholesale side, and you just have to deal with them as long as they're delivering what they are legally obligated to deliver. And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense. I've noticed for me, sometimes I'll get a really good sales guy or engineer, and I'll get accustomed to them. And the problem is they'll start getting promoted. It's like as soon as you get somebody competent and they're in there for a minute, they move up. So promoted to incompetence, I think, is what I've heard. You keep getting promoted until you're not capable of moving any further because you just don't know what you're doing anymore. I'm hoping to get there. Just kidding. I've been there for years. Ha ha. All right. So let me show you guys a special surprise that I've been working on. I put a link down there. It's entry number 20, The Boring Company. You guys probably saw that. It's The Boring Company. It's owned by Elon Musk. He's got this idea that he's going to make tunnels underneath all of our cities to expedite transit or whatever. And he made these flamethrowers. I think he made like 20,000 flamethrowers, selling them for $500 a piece, and they sold out in like 5 days. And so I was looking at those and I was like, man, that's pretty cool. It looks like a gun that just shoots like 2 foot flame. So it's not even that big. And I was thinking, that's crazy that somebody would pay $500 for that. And I was thinking, I wonder how cheap I could make an equivalent flamethrower. So I went to my local Harbor Freight and I picked up a propane torch kit for $25 and then sprinkle in some additional accessories. I'm not completely done yet, but this is my flamethrower so far. What do you think? Compare it to the picture. How's it look? I'm not done with it. I'm going to put some more. I'm going to dress it up a little bit, right? Like, this is just what I've done today. I'm going to kind of clean up. So you got like the control knob here in the back, and then you can fire it up right there. And then you got the... And then I got one of those little 1 pound Coleman propane cylinders that I'm gonna strap right here to the side. I'm gonna put some like weathering effects on it so it'll look pretty boss. It's not that dangerous, I don't think.
Yeah, it.
Woo! What screams America more than a homemade flamethrower, Thomas?
I don't think making something like that here would even be legal. So.
Oh, it's legal here. It's Texas. I could strap like a laser pointer and a shotgun on it. And that would just be me going to the grocery store.
Yeah, that's just not how things work here.
On the original, you know, source of the idea, I love how they call it officially not a flamethrower. Because customs places won't let you import flamethrowers, so they call it not a flamethrower is the official name.
But if you look at the nozzle on that thing, it looks identical to the nozzle on the one I got from Harbor Freight. And all I did was straighten it out in the middle, put some... I'm making a build video. It's going to be pretty awesome. I got to think of something to flamethrower with it. You guys have any suggestions? I was thinking like a can of soda. If I did that, would it explode? Like if I got it hot enough?
I mean, I know it'll explode if it gets cold enough.
It's not going to be impressive.
You know, freezers.
It will start to boil, which will make the liquid turn into gas, which will expand, should make it explode, yeah.
Booyah. It's going to be pretty boss. I was going to say I'd let you guys try it, but it'll be impossible. Yeah. I don't want to get in trouble trying to ship this thing. But yeah, I should have it fully operational tomorrow, I think.
Nice.
I'm waiting on one part. It's like a little fitting that'll fit the like the little Coleman tank to the adapter to the massive 20-pound tank fitting or whatever. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. It's a total waste of time. It's going to be pretty sweet. So, you guys have any closing thoughts? Anything else? You ready to put a fork in it?
I just think here in Slovakia, if you told somebody that you made a flamethrower in your spare time, you would have...
They have no internet.
No.
It was like we lost the connection to...
Maybe that's what it is. They would just hang up on you in Slovakia.
Or the government has gotten word you talk about flamethrowers.
They heard him. They heard him say it. All right. Well, I guess we'll close it out. If he comes back in time, that'll be great. All right, Mikey. If people are going to grab you on the internet, how do they go about doing that?
Well, his Facebook page is probably the easiest place to find me. But just look for my name.
All right. So facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. That's a great place to find Mike, or drop any information over to us that you'd like us to have. Questions, comments, all that good stuff. All of the really good discourse is coming through Mike right there. If you want to get a hold of me, greg@gregsoul.com is my email, or you can just hit me, gregsoul.com. You can find some junk there as well. Let's see what else. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. We have a very active and thriving Slack channel now. Super excited about a lot of good, interesting people there. We've actually got a developer in there. This guy's like, I'm not even really a network guy. I'm just a developer, but I like MicroTik stuff. So that's cool. So we've got all kinds of interesting stuff in there. I mean, Thomas is up here. He's a developer too, but he's a super network nerd too, though. So this guy, he's sort of like looking in from the outside, which I thought was interesting. So a lot of really good discourse, a lot of good conversations in there. So encourage you guys to keep hitting that. Thomas, if people want to hit you on the internet, how are they going to find you?
Yeah, pretty easy to find. Just Google my name. I'm on all social networks everywhere. But yeah, probably easiest, just go to unimus.net. We just added live chat, so now you can live chat with me through unimus.net.
That's the hotness. And so, as everyone should know, Unimus is the amazing backup software for kind of your vendor agnostic network infrastructure. If there's not something, or rather if you have something that's not supported, Thomas is really good about adding that stuff in there. Excellent. Well, I guess that's about it.
We're up to, looks like, 14 or 15 people that are not us in the Slack chat.
Excellent. Well, give us your goddamn money and then join the Slack chat. Jesus. Come on.
Yeah, and let me turn my tilt my camera. And for those that didn't see the unboxing, I am using a real microphone now, not the one built into the camera.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's what we get.
Yeah, it'll be pretty sweet. And then we'll get another microphone and I'll burn it with a flamethrower. if we get enough patrons, that'll be sweet. We'll do that.
All right. Questions, well comments? Spent. You guys consider responsible with how we spend the money.
Nobody said we had to. There's no terms and conditions there that say I'm not going to just burninate or everything, just melt it. Questions, comments, please keep them coming. We need to know what you guys want to hear about, what you are curious about, any new technology, any new techniques that you think we should know about and disseminate, please let us know. We haven't had like a special guest in a long time. We need to do that. We need to find us a special guest. So give us some suggestions.
I've got a guy that would love to talk anytime about IPv6.
All right. Nobody wants to hear that. No, just kidding. That might be interesting.
Tangent. If you're in Silicon Valley area, and you get some time Wednesday the 7th, hit me up. I'm going to be looking for stuff to do down there. So
cool. Cause it's not like I've been to San Francisco once, and it was the most amazing trip I've ever had in my life. So if you can't find enough stuff to do, there's something wrong with you, Mike.
Well, there is, but...
Yeah, there's a lot wrong with you. Anyway, thank you guys for listening, if you've made it all this way. Questions, comments, keep them coming. And thank you guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
See you.